Hello and welcome to Hey Art, What's Good? We are a podcast based in the north of England where we like to see what's good with art. My name is Alice.
My name is Rosie.
And we have a guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yes. My name's Laura Sillers. I'm Director of MEMA and Dean of the MEMA School of Art and Design.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Yeah.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to see you both again and to hear you both.
Yes. Most importantly.
Listeners might remember we had Laura on the podcast last year to have a chat about what was on at the MEMA at the time. So it's always nice to have people back on the podcast because we haven't really done much of that. Yeah, I mean, we're doing that a bit more now, but it's great. So you might remember, Laura, something like to do on Hey Art, What's Good is to kind of check in with each other and like say something good that's happened recently, or like something nice that you'd like to talk about. My good thing for this episode is a podcast I've listened to the entirety of recently. It's great. It's called Wind of Change, and it's like a kind of investigative journalist kind of it's like an 8-episode series, I think. And it's this dude is a journalist just exploring a rumor that he heard once, heard it from his friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from like a superior, and it's about the CIA's and potential involvement in a really, really popular song that was written in the 80s. And it's such an interesting premise. It's like there's a song called Wind of Change by the Scorpions. So it's all about that. And it's just crazy, like to all the places and stuff he goes to just to try and figure out if this is true.
Absolutely.
So I'd recommend that.
Can recommend. It's exactly my sort of podcast, and I'm telling everyone to listen to it.
Sounds amazing.
If you like, it's like high produced, like quality podcasting. Ooh, it's tasty to the ears.
It's like for me who edits this little humble podcast, I'm like, oh, imagine doing all that sound mixing. It sounds so lovely, and all the sources and stuff. It's great. So I'd thoroughly recommend.
Fab. Thank you.
Laura, what about you?
All right, I'm going next. I'm like, well, I will tell you. So my life since we've been into lockdown has been pretty intense. Obviously, we're still running the gallery online and we're running the art school fully online. So it's been very busy. When we went into lockdown, art schools all across the country were sort of telling their students they needed to make their degree show online. And, you know, I didn't want to do that with our students because I felt I totally respected why people were doing it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think, you know, they didn't have their studios, they didn't have all the materials they needed. We were working with them brilliantly online and supporting them loads, but I knew they weren't going to be able to present their best.
Mm-hmm. There's only so much you can do, really.
Exactly. And I just thought we needed to take the pressure off them. But it was quite hard because, you know, in these roles, you're a little bit competitive. You want to make sure you're doing what everyone else is doing. But I just didn't want to load that pressure onto our students. I wanted them to make the best work they could and to pass their courses. And so we've got plans for them for next year, which I'll tell you about. But what was lovely is a group of the fine art students gathered together and they decided for themselves that they wanted to do something, online degree show for themselves. And it's called, I've only just got the link in the last day or so, it's called Until Further Notice.
Love it.
And they've gathered together all of these works and they're so smart and they're so strong and they've represented themselves so brilliantly. It just lifted my day when I got it because it wasn't like top down. I hadn't said you have to do this, but they had chosen to do the work they could do and the work's fantastic. So it's a total lift because that's theirs now. It wasn't something we said you have to do this. But they can own that. And so they've produced this thing and done it their own way. And I just think it's really smart, even the title, Until Further Notice.
Yeah, I love that. I've written that down. That's class. That is so good. That is what like we as a podcast are all about. I feel like that's the definition of like when we set out to do this. Ooh, lovely. Oh, I don't know if I can beat that, honestly.
Have a go. Go on.
My good thing is that at the weekend, I saw my friends for the first time, it's like since March probably. And we just went and sat on a field like 2 meters apart from each other, but it was the most fun I've had in a long time. So much fun that it was worth the horrific sunburn I got. And it wasn't even that nice a day.
it was cloudy, right?
A sneaky sun. Like, it was kind of behind, it was windy. So you like, maybe because I couldn't feel the heat on my skin. And then I got home and I was a proper tomato.
You know, you had sunburn last time we spoke.
Is it you?
I've got a feeling it's possibly the other way around, but maybe I will buy some sunscreen for you both.
You're always too little too late with you, Laura.
Oh, great. Well, those are some good things. And I'm glad your good thing was related to art and the art school, Laura, because that's what we're here to talk about today. So as Laura said, she's the dean of the Mima School of Art, which is just, first of all, a cool name for like an art school in general. But it's... just good to see more kind of art focused schools like in the north and in Middlesbrough. So I just wanted to just kind of get the lowdown on that for this episode.
The inside scoop, if you will.
Indeed. So how long has the art school been around, Laura?
So, right. It's a little bit complicated, but...
Can't wait.
I'll try and do the timeline in as easy a way as possible to know. So MIMA became part of Teesside University in 2014. And that was, you know, a relationship between the council, because MIMA had been set up by the council. And then the university came along and supported the gallery to become part of the university. I started in 2018 and was like, okay, how do we make more of this relationship now that we're part of the university? What can we do? So I started exploring a whole range of different options. And gradually I sort of realised that the main business of a university is teaching students. And although we were doing projects with students in the gallery and internships and placements and events, we were always on the fringe of the main business of the university. And mm-hmm. so gradually a range of different conversations took place, and somehow very collaboratively and very organically, the idea that we would take over the fine art courses that the university was running and bring them into MIMA's domain evolved. And then it was like, okay, well, if we're going to do that, does that make us an art school? Probably an art school. So I remember there was this really big meeting and I wrote this paper saying, explaining why it should be MIMA School of Art and Design, or at the time actually it was MIMA School of Art. We're just taking on the art courses. And then we worked with all of the academics to redesign the courses. And then we expanded to include design as well. So now we have art and design, we've got fine art, we've got fashion, we've got interiors, we've got product design.
Fabulous.
We've got graphic design. It's fantastic. So we've got this whole family of creatives under our domain. We've got more than 500 students and this amazing team of academics. Wow. So, but just one step at a time, when, you know, it was a good idea for a lot of different people. It made a lot of sense. So it wasn't a hard sell. People wanted it to happen and it felt good. So that's the evolution of the story of MIMA School of Art and Design setting up. Mm-hmm. What it means though is we've got, you know, our students are studying in a museum. They meet artists on a daily basis. They meet curators. They meet graphic designers who are working on live projects with the museum, with the gallery, with communities. So it becomes a very live space in which our students take part in the work that we do.
That's so exciting.
That's amazing.
Especially because I feel, and I think this is something that I actually learned after university, after graduating, because I'm excited that it's art and design, because that's what I did in Leeds, not just art. The design element's important too. It's kind of, in my mind, what makes things kind of, it's the extra step to making art applicable to real life. Like, everything around us is designed. Very exciting. But that was my own little nerd out. But yeah, the main thing I learned after university was the importance of networking and really that all the artists and curators and people that I could meet at university, I don't think I really took advantage of that. But equally, I don't think that was really stressed upon me in the same way that it should have been. And then obviously, I have amazing friends like Alice, and we do fun, cool art things together now. So we kind of made that happen for ourselves. But it's strange that I didn't get taught that at school. So it's nice that to see that there are actually schools out there teaching that, because maybe that's an area where I was let down.
Yeah, I mean, it's no sense. I think it's the difference between what can you teach and what can you almost like inculcate, like show. You know, it's the difference between show and tell, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is how things work. This is how things happen. Meet this person. Oh, you've got a great idea together. You know, that can turn into something.
Yeah, definitely.
So when we're connecting the students, it's not. I think the word networking can be quite daunting. But actually,
agreed.
About relationship building and
I like that so much better.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, creative relationships. And we've got a fabulous team. But recently we've been able to appoint two new professors, Mikhail Karakas, who's an artist, and he's amazing.
I know, we saw his work. I was just like, my mouth just hit the floor because I was just like. He's so cool.
He's very, very cool. And Sarah Perks, who is also fabulous, and she's an artistic director curator route rather than, and he's an artist. And I sat in a pub after a talk that he'd done, and one of the young sort of emerging artists in our school was saying to him, oh, I met this guy and he said this. And Mikhail said to him, what was his name? And the young artist couldn't remember, and he said, you need to remember his name, because that wasn't, you know, you met each other, you connected, and actually that means you can go back to him in the future and ask him about something, or maybe even work with him. And I could just see the lights going on in this young man's head. It was like, oh, okay, that wasn't just someone telling me something in a disassociated way. Mm-hmm. That was something that I've got now and I can do something with if I want to. And you just sort of realize, it's in these small bits of conversation where people start to learn not just the what, but the how things get done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Again, big believers here at Hey Art, What's Good, of the importance of conversation and just accessible conversation and that real, like, a real human relationship with someone. Because you're so right with networking, it seems so like corporate, and that doesn't seem to have a place.
I hate that word as well.
It doesn't really have a place in art. Relationship building and creative relationships, now that's something I can really work with. I've just been writing about, this morning I was writing about cultural capital, so I'm like in this headspace of like art for everyone all the time. So this is exactly what I needed today.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I feel like you witnessed an artist, like a life-changing moment in an artist. You like said you saw the lights go on, and I think it's completely comparable to, you know, that phrase of like give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, teach a man to fish and he'll whatever. Mm. It's literally that. It's like, I'm imagining in an art party at university and one of the tutors is like, oh, talk to this curator. And that's like, that's giving the fish. But going off free as an independent artist in that art party and actually going fishing, that's what you need to go do.
So many analogies, I love it.
Yeah, I'm fully in the pond. But... And I think there's something, when we took on the art school, it was really important, and this is how I approached taking on MIMA when I started as director, is to, in community, in the world of community development, they call it asset mapping, which is another sort of abstract, professionalized term, but essentially it's like, what is already good about here? What do we need to keep?
Yeah.
So we did quite a lot of work and workshopping with the staff about what did they think were their special attributes, what made them tick, what made the courses unique already that we could build on for MIMA School of Art and Design. And one of the really key things that came out of it was that the artists, academics, saw themselves as co-learners with the students. so that you're always in a situation where everybody's learning. There's not one expert at the top who's imparting their knowledge to, you know, their followers at the bottom, which is a very, you know, sort of 19th century version of an art school, perhaps.
Or, yeah,
imagine the salons in the early days.
I was just thinking that with the masters teaching exactly. The students exactly how to hold their brushes and how to apply the paint. It's not like that anymore.
No, exactly.
Hasn't been for a long time.
Exactly. And I think that sense of everyone's co-learning, the stuff that the academic, you know, experts can learn absolutely from the young emerging artists coming in, or from, we have artists studying on the course who are in their 70s.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
Coming with these hugely complicated, amazing life stories with so much rich material to bring to the mix. So much of what that is in the heart of the art school is connecting the peer group to each other, to understand that they've got this sort of knowledge base and, you know, resource in themselves, as well as the academics. It's that group.
Yeah, I love that.
That's great. That kind of leads us to a point I want to kind of talk about is, like, because obviously we've been to Middlesbrough like countless times over the past couple of years been doing this podcast, and there's such like a good community of artists there. Like, it's always seems to be more of a collaborative effort. Like, no one's necessarily in it for themselves, and whenever like there's an exhibition on, people like to go together, recommend like where to go next, or like have a chat about kind of how the art started, and everyone seems to really kind of like keep in touch, and it's a really nice community. Mm-hmm. From what we've noticed. So I just kind of wanted to have a talk about that in relation to the university, because it's in such like, it's the Northeast, like we love it, and the Northeast does tend to get like left out of some things a bit, especially in the creative industries. So I just kind of wanted to talk about like the placement of MEMA and the MEMA School of Art, and how that's quite, I want to say, like, beneficial.
Yeah, it's a power move, isn't it?
Yeah, power move.
We've got to, like, yeah, it's like, look at us. We've got, like, another important institution. You can't ignore us. Yeah. Me, and it's not just an important institution. I'm going to go out on a limb here, personal opinion, and say it's an art institution which is, like, pushing to make a positive impact on the community that it's in. That's what That's what stands apart for MEMA.
I could agree with that.
I mean, I think that's really true, and that's one of the things that does make MEMA really, really special. It's not aloof. It's not apart. It's in and with both its artistic creative community and its the geographic communities that surround it. I mean, I think you can see that in the way that we've dealt with the lockdown. So co-publishing Memezina every week for 12 weeks with community members, and you've got academics writing in there, and you've got people who come to Cloth Club or the Gardening Club or kids, and it brings it together, and showing that actually we can co-create something together. Without sounding like a really cheesy banking advert. There's a utopian aspect to it we're trying to achieve. In terms of the communities of the creative communities you mentioned, absolutely, there is a group, the Auxiliary, Pineapple Black, Tees Valley Arts, Navigator North, fantastic agents who are a platform A, there determinedly trying to make a difference and make Middlesbrough a creative place for the artists who choose to live and work there. And I think that is incredibly important, and it's, you know, it is vitalizing. We have a group called the Middlesbrough Cultural Partnership, and we work together to try and develop sort of the approach for the town and how we can work together and make a change. So there are a brilliant group of people who are massively invested in the place and the people, and, you know, giving making sure that the people of Middlesbrough have got what they, what everybody else has, and that we are a place where you can be creative. And I think that is, I would say, a really interesting aspect of certainly what the lockdown is showing us, which is you can work from anywhere. Yes. So what is it that makes places stand apart from each other?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
And I like
that's an important thing as well. Oh, sorry, go on.
No. No, because I feel like I always like bombard. I'm like, I get into an idea and I'm just like, yes.
I mean, I was just going to say, because we, an episode that came out, I think it would be the episode that came out before this one, we were having a chat with the Social Distance Art Project, and we kind of touched on like the importance of like creating art where you are and kind of impressing the fact that it's like, no, I don't need to like go down south or like whatever. So like to build the community, like the art community, like from kind of like an educational standpoint. So like, I mean, me and Rosie met in university, so that's kind of how this all started. But then to kind of like impress the importance of that, like actually in school, but the environment there, like being in Middlesbrough, being in the Tees Valley, where it's just always continued, like it seems like the community, like to have that in kind of one setting, like the school kind of environment, but then just to, in the greater world outside of that, it's like, oh, it's also like that. Great. It's like actual kind of real life, like real world value and skills and stuff.
I feel like if I was a student at like MEMA School of Art, it would be unlike an experience in another town or city where you'd go as a student from like your university classes and activities and go to a like a gallery setting. And I feel like it would just be equally as inclusive. You know what I mean? Because I remember going to places as a student and not really feeling legitimate because, you know, you walk into places like some art galleries, you know, that white cube space, like clean, bright lights. It's intimidating, fancy champagne and I don't know not quite, but yeah, well, I mean, I can imagine
like, and it's deliberately like that because a lot of it is in certainly in the commercial side, it's about high-end sales.
Oh yeah,
you know, so I think there's a whole load of, and you know, one of the things with the agenda shifting calls from groups like Black Lives Matter is that we need to really have a good look at what the art world is doing and what it's portraying, and the social barriers that it's are in place just to get involved with it in the first place. And you're right, the vision for MEMA School of Art and Design is absolutely that at the point that you've left MEMA School of Art and Design, you've been immersed in the professional world of art and artists and curators and arts managers. And you know, we set up something called MEMA Mondays, and all of the and that's when the gallery's closed, so that students get to be in the gallery behind the scenes, and they meet all of our different teams. They meet, so they know them on first name basis. They've got an intimate understanding of what their job roles are, so they can see the spectrum of work that's available for them. You know, my career was very much every new element was a sort of new weird surprise that I didn't know existed. It's like we want to, a little bit like, you know, the Wizard of Oz, we want to turn it back round on its head so you can see how this thing works and see what bits interest you and see how then A, you can connect with it, but B, also a bit like what you're doing, you could make your own business that connects to it. It doesn't, you don't have to necessarily step straight into a big institution. You can set something up that's unique and bespoke, and you'll have a more of a sense of how to do that. So absolutely, that's when we've been in lockdown, we set up really quickly an online student forum. So me and the two senior staff members from the art school and the admin team have met every Thursday at 2 o'clock with a course representative for every course that we run, so that we can work with them, talk with them, understand what their issues are, resolve them as fast as we possibly can, and so that they can be connected and part of the school and its direction and influencing it and be very porous. And you know, they're asking us, they want training on how to be a freelancer, how to set up a business. So they're really thinking about what do they need for the next step. And so because we're closed, we've committed to something called MEMA Class of 2020. And we're going to do mentoring and coaching through the next year. And in summer 2021, we're going to do a big exhibition of Class of 2020. Because they've lost out on all of their big celebrations. Like I've said, you know, some of the notice, they've gone and done it themselves, which is wonderful. But we want to make sure they have that moment where we're putting the platform underneath them and shining a light on this amazing work that these guys have done.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. That's so important. And that really shows like a respect for your students, which is beautiful to see. And I think it's this sort of like attentiveness and care that is so important for specifically creative subjects. Because you're right, this is... it's classic for like students to say this sort of thing, but it's like, wouldn't you just feel cheated out of your money if you'd paid like however many thousands of pounds a year to not get your degree show at the end? And like, that's really what you've been working towards and you've been so excited for. And it's like, I was saying on the last episode when we were talking to Socially Distant Art Project, because check them out, fantastic girls doing fantastic things, really making opportunities for graduates. But you know, the degree show is such a fantastic opportunity and it's really such a stepping stone for so many artists to bridge that kind of going from art student to just fully fledged artist. And it's quite hard to make that step sometimes, like emotionally and mentally, actually, just like to get out of your own head as an artist, to stop treating yourself like a student and actually start respecting your own abilities. And again, personally, the degree show was a huge step for me in being like, okay, I'm not a student anymore, I'm a proper artist now. And if I hadn't kind of come to terms with that when I did, who knows, maybe I wouldn't have kept my practice up, I might not have been as open to opportunities as I have been. So it's wonderful that people have that motivation to keep up their practice until next year, because I have a feeling it's the first year that's the hardest, you know, keeping up when you've been so used to having a studio buddies, equipment, you know, mentors, and it's all kind of taken away all at once. And then with a quarantine and global pandemic on top of that, it's all a bit much.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that was what I felt, and it's such an important moment for them. And you can't replicate the degree show without, you know, doing something online is fantastic. And it's a great way of at least bringing a close to something. But if your work is not naturally for an online space, then it's not going to deliver that moment for you. And when we were talking about redesigning the courses that we run, we talked about this idea. Yes, it's an academic course. Yes, it's filled with rigor and critique and professional development, personal development. But this is also a big journey in your life, and we want to make that experience something that you'll remember and that will fuel you for years to come. And that does come in that sort of climax of the degree show, where you've got that thing and actually all these scattered ideas that you were working on in different projects come together, and you've sort of articulated something about the voice that you want to have in the world. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting next year. We made the promise quite early on, although we had to wait until the students had got through a lot of their coursework, because I didn't want to put them off doing their actual coursework, because I wanted, you know, them to get through as well. But it was to say, we need to make this statement of intent now, because we all know what life is like. Next year is going to be frenetic. It's going to be busy. Mm-hmm. We're going to be working out how we operate our gallery socially distanced, and you know, if there's a local lockdown, you know, you can imagine lots of things will pile up. But to sort of put a line in the sand and say, right, for next year we're going to do this, and we're going to make sure that we retain our attention on this group, it means that we've planned it in, and it makes it more sort of a stable thing that everyone's got to look forward to.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's very important as well, isn't it? Knowing that there's actually something to work for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of like a motivational thing, I think. We've just generally been struggling with just in a life kind of sense. It's like, don't know where the world's going to be. So I don't know what I can like look forward to or plan or whatever. So yeah, like, that's great. And that's such an important, like, it's your rite of passage, isn't it? Coming out of a creative degree. If you've got a degree show, it's like, that's the thing.
I think for other people, I think I would try and compare it to like going to your graduation, but it's so much more than that. Because I'm trying to think, like, is there anything comparable? And obviously going to your graduation is a very big deal, and it's a very beautiful ceremony that you can bring your family to and celebrate your achievement. But a degree show is like a real personal thing.
It would be like going to your graduation on the night that you handed your thesis in.
Yeah. Legit. God, I'm getting like, I'm hyperventilating thinking about it.
Yeah, and it was amazing last year when we did the MA degree show. We're actually working with the MA because we've got MAs and PhD students as well. So we're looking at doing an MA socially distant physical show if we can. That's not launched yet. We're just working on it at the moment. But yeah, when they had their show last year and they'd made such amazing work, but what was a few things that were amazing about it for me was, A, their families coming, and just how blown away their families were at seeing how talented their family, you know, sometimes it was their partner or their brother or sister. And we had one grandma came and she was in tears and, you know, so that was amazing. But then there was another thing that was amazing about it, which was we'd sent the invitation out to our general mailing list from MEMA as well.
Oh, nice.
And I found myself drinking a sort of rather warm, strange, dark red liquid, which is perhaps red wine, corridor with an older gentleman and an older woman. And I was chatting to him. I said, oh, you know, have you got someone in here? And they said, oh, no. I'm a material chemist I was in ICI. I'm retired now. I get your invitations. He said, I'm so happy to be here. This is wonderful. Aww. And then he started describing all the artworks. He said, and we were in Tate Modern last week. And I think some of the people, they could be in Tate Modern. Definitely that work. And, you know, you just got this sort of brilliant clash of cultures of people who are used to seeing the final product in the big, fancy art gallery.
It brings it home a little bit, doesn't it? Like, oh, this is actually being made here in my town by young, brilliant people.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's really filled my heart. I think if that had been me, I would have cried.
I think it is like that. And then again, like with the very, very diverse mix of students you get with these people who've had a whole career. We've got one woman who was a headmistress in a school. And is doing now. She's doing a PhD. It's like having
good for her. Wow,
her foundation course, her art course, her master's course, and now a PhD. It's like a lot of us, or a lot of people, wouldn't even think they've got a chance to have that creative life, but they can access it at any point. Over the summer, we do these summer university courses, and my colleagues, Sarah, who's a curator professor, and Mikhail, and this amazing he's called Simon McEwen. He's a disabled artist who works with sound and light, and he's brilliant as well. And
I'm sure I know that name.
He's an international artist.
Yeah, I will have heard it, definitely.
And he's fully born and bred in the area, so he's got this sort of
sweet
international perspective and really local perspective. And the three of them, I was like, okay, it's strange times, and you're going to run the most sort of entry level course that we run at the summer university. And but they've just loved it. So they've gathered together all these amazing ideas to they're looking at art and sport and art and cats, and just having a lot of fun in. Because I suppose that online space opens up new ways of doing things. And, you know, usually you would put your professors, you often in some art schools, you don't get to meet your professors until you're doing your PhD. You sort of, you get taught by all sorts of different people, but mm-hmm. We just thought we'd throw things around and see what happened.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. I mean, like you said, like a lot can be done online now, so it's as good a time as any to kind of experiment around and be like, what could we do? And then like this could be something that sticks in the future, like you know, maybe just do an online art school if the reception's been good, because there's definitely a value in it, because like not like having to like go to Middlesbrough, I suppose, to do a summer school. Like, have you found there's like lots of people from like elsewhere in the country taking part?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of people we've got a lot of international students as well. And
nice.
And one thing that's wonderful is that we have a partnership with Prague, and so we've got students in Prague undertaking our courses, and also in India. So we've got these kind of international relationships with these, you know, fantastic people who are delivering in different contexts as well.
So yeah, oh, that's mint.
I definitely think we're going to learn from, there's not, you know, face to face, there's a really important role of face to face, but I think if you sort of apply a bit of discipline and say, right, there is a really important role in face to face, but it doesn't have to be everything all of the time. So here we are. Yeah. Like, it's not quite the same as you guys sitting around my desk with all of your crazy microphones attached to the table. But it's not far off. It's really nice to see you, and we can connect, and, you know, we can have the conversation we need to have. If we were learning something really tactile and sort of maybe using machine, then it would be absolutely relevant to be in the same space together. So it's just trying to understand what things really come alive by being in the same place, and how do you make sure that those moments when you are in the same place are as special as they can be, and then using the online space to do different kinds of things, which can also involve human connection and creativity, but that have to be curated slightly differently.
I love that. I love the idea that as we move forward, how will galleries and art schools and general creative spaces kind of reflect what you just said there about the physical time we spend together being more sacred, and almost that, like, do you know how art, I kind of reject this idea sometimes, but art is this sacred object and we protect it by putting it in art galleries and museums and things. But it kind of reframes it that actually now the sacred object is each other and being in each other's physical presence. And I love that idea. We were talking last episode, I think we mentioned an exhibition where like you can touch everything. And it's, I love that. So it's like, how can we like make that like about an exhibition about presence? That could be really cool. And again, obviously, that there's ripples into education and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, actually, I'm reminded there was a big project Marina Abramovic curated at the Whitworth in Manchester in the, maybe one of the early renditions of Manchester International Festival. And she curated a performance exhibition. And you had to commit to being there for 4 hours, and you got a certificate at the end if you made it.
Wow.
And, but to start the exhibition, you had to start with a 45-minute almost like yoga session or meditation session led by Marina. And it included drinking a glass of water really slowly, looking into the eyes of a stranger, and all of these things. And it was all about making your body ready to be present in the space.
Whoa.
And there was this brilliant moment where she was leading it in quite a whoop, whoop, you do this, you do that. And now we were in a really sort of strong way. And a woman stood up and said, I am a 50-year-old woman and I will not take direction from anybody else. And Marina stood up and she said, I can't remember if she was 60 or 70. I've got in my head that she was 70, but she could have been 60. And I am a 70-year-old woman, and if you want to be in this space, you will follow my instructions. Whoa! Stand off.
Very good.
It was all about how how do you occupy space and how do you get yourself in the right mindset to be, I mean, I don't know how you felt in lockdown, but I'm really trying to deal with being permanently slightly distracted.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, now you've said it, I'm really, it's all kind of crumbling in around me. Like my own reality is looking at me in the face.
Yep. Like, case in point, yesterday I was trying to do some editing on my PC and I've got a household of many pets. So I had one dog sitting on my knee and I had the other dog sitting by my feet under the desk. And I'm like, I can't get anything done here.
I know. I had a one-to-one meeting with our vice chancellor and midway through a six-year-old arrived to ask where dad's iPad was. Oh, it's quite hard to retain your kind of professional. And yeah. He was lovely about it, obviously, the vice chancellor, but we're in this situation, but it's like this strange merging of, and that's like, even meeting all the students on a Thursday, it's like suddenly you go from meeting them in the gallery to being like, whoa, I'm kind of sat at the end of your bed.
In everyone's bedroom. It is a bit more intimate.
Yeah. Well, you're saying about like kind of getting yourself in the right mindset to do stuff. I'm wearing like a blazer and like a suit today because like I want to be smart for this. This is like a business meeting. So
yeah.
You've got to do it sometimes. Like, I've now decided I'm either wearing like no makeup or like fully doing something crazy on my face because I can't be bothered with boring makeup anymore. If I'm gonna, like, why would I wear makeup that just looks like my face? Because it's quarantine. If I'm gonna do makeup, it's gonna be makeup, like blue eyeshadow and glitter.
Hell yeah.
Because you've just got to, like, you've got to make these new rules for yourself.
Yeah, I think so. Yes. No, but I think everyone, I'm really impressed by how everyone's coped and actually that strange new level of intimacy it's given us. Like, you would think that,
yeah, definitely,
you'd think it would have pushed us all apart, but in lots of ways it's made us more connected.
Yes, and I think it's really pushed people to like really think about that we can be connected if we really try. Because I feel bad now because I've got friends all over the world and I'm just infamously bad at responding to texts and calls and emails and all of the above. And now I've just had to get better. I've just had to learn how to do FaceTime and be more efficient, and that's just been my own thing that I have to do. And I'm kind of thinking about it like, well, really, I could have done that without the quarantine if I'd have just put my mind to it. Yeah. So it's kind of that reminder that actually I can talk to my friends across the world whenever I want because I'm talking to my friends in Whitley Bay every Monday because I can't see them at the pub. And it's that whole, actually, there's loads of artists that, like for this podcast, for example, that I'd love to get in touch with that we haven't. And it's partly because we've been going to exhibitions and talking about them. But realistically, there's nothing to stop us just sending them an email and getting them on the show. They don't have to come into the studio. That's what we've learned
we've got an academic called Paul Stewart, who's an artist and he's fantastic. And he teaches Mima School of Art and Design. And from the beginning of lockdown, he started making these interview videos with artists from his network because he was like, actually, here's this amazing opportunity. I can do this with anyone. And then on one of the Thursday roundup meetings, one of my students said to me, it was brilliant because we had this reading list. And so Paul emailed people on the reading list. And rather than just reading their text, we did in conversations with them.
Oh, so they just love it.
Everybody exists in the same space now. So, like, why not connect more?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's so cool.
That's lush. So, yeah, in times of challenging times, yeah, we can still find creativity and creative safe spaces and social spaces. We've just got to kind of reframe how we think of those. And that's what galleries are good at, reframing things.
Yeah.
I've got a question that just prompted by what you were saying before. With you've like a link, was it with Prague, I think? I was wondering if there are like study abroad opportunities within the courses at the MIMA School of Art and Design. Like, just as a general, like, just curious about that.
In case Alice wants to study there.
Yeah. Like, that was a big component for me choosing Leeds for where I did. And I loved my year abroad. So I was just wondering what that's like for an art school.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in terms of a year abroad, that's usually a sort of university-wide thing that you can do and sign up to, and I'm, you know, that will exist. But what we've committed to in all of our courses is that our students will have an international experience. The last group, the first years, they went to Berlin together.
Oh my god, I went to the wrong school.
You know, also we looked at the Venice Biennale, but in the end we went to Berlin.
God.
But I think and with the Prague and India, that's you know, really key links that we can build on for those sorts of exchanges. Those are things that we want to do in the future. But then, for instance, with fashion, they undertook a international collaboration project where a group in Turkey designed the fabric, and then they worked on designing the outfits that went with the fabric.
That sounds amazing. A good idea.
Yeah, it was amazing, but it was challenging because, you know, there was a language barrier and all of these things to overcome that were tricky. And even for the students, you know, quite a big sort of stretch goal to undertake this. So, yeah, but I think that international aspect of the art field is one of the amazing advantages of it. It's that thing of in the past, being international used to mean you sort of went to the Venice Biennale and picked the best thing, negotiated a deal. And now it's being really authentically connected to your community so that your place is infused by a spirit that's unique and independent, and contributing that to an international conversation, being part of something. And that's what I think the art field itself opens up, and artists are resolutely international in their approach.
Yes. Oh, very well said. And I couldn't agree more. Artists are graduating, and just by having an Instagram account for their art are international, that they can have that audience. And I love that, again, that you're like nurturing this idea that like you can maintain that regional identity and be proud of it whilst also simultaneously existing in a global community, which isn't easy. And as well, it wasn't taught in my university, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I guess I'm impressed by so many, you know, I would have loved to have studied fine art. I studied history of art and history when I went to university. And I think one of the things, you know, I grew up in the Northeast and there wasn't a Baltic, there wasn't a Sage. And I say this over and over again, there wasn't a MIMA. There wasn't really the kind of lighthouses for the sector showing you direction, you know, where you can go, who's in the field, how to connect to the field, what does the field look like, who are the partners in it, you know, your area in relation to other areas. And you know, now we've built those institutions and developed an infrastructure, we've got a huge opportunity in the North to be able to nurture our own talent, not only to work in those institutions, but also to connect through those institutions into the wider field that exists.
Absolutely. Mm. And I'm hoping that this is another, you know, we talk a lot about the pull to London or the South, but mainly London, really. And I hope that it's by having these institutions, by having this infrastructure, that we can combat that. And it's not just about, it's about keeping people here, and it's about drawing more people here. And I love this idea that people are actually going to start coming from the South to study Northern art. And we mentioned places like the Auxiliary and Platform A. And in these places, I see so much art that reflects specifically Middlesbrough and its industrial history. And I love to see that. And it would be so enlightening for so many people potentially coming from elsewhere to come to the north and have this really bespoke northern art experience.
Yeah, I think I'm really interested in a few words you used there, like the idea of enlightening. And I think one of, you know, the art sector itself really comes out of the history of the Enlightenment and this idea of bringing light into the world in order to to reason and to debate. And I think a lot about what's the role of an art gallery and an art school at the moment in the environment that we find ourselves in. And I do think, you know, one of our key roles is to generate space in which we can foster really meaningful debate so that you can see different perspectives and that you can bring those perspectives together and not necessarily see them. There's not that many spaces in the public realm where debate can take place. If you think about social media, it can be this in a really heightened environment of increasing tension and stress. It's not necessarily a slow space or a reflective space, a place where you step back.
And I don't want to like bring everyone down, but like even Parliament debate is an absolute state of affairs. So like it's not like we have amazing role models to teach us how to debate properly.
But that debating system that you've got in our sort of national government structure, you know, comes from a very particular place, and it's, you know, it's gendered, it's inculcated with particular kind of class systems.
Oh yeah.
You know, we need spaces where but we need spaces where people can genuinely come with very different perspectives and give each other the respect to hear from each other, rather than to try and prove why one thing is absolutely right over another thing. Yeah. And that's what artists do. They inhabit the space of others and they sort of empathetically draw from those spaces and make them visible.
Yep. And
through that,
definitely.
That's where you can start to have different kinds of conversation, which are less combative, less about winning points or scoring a sort of media one-liner.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, they're genuinely about people changing their perspectives and growing with other people.
Yes. And I feel so often people have these conversations feeling like there has to be, like you say, like that you have to like win the conversation, you have to win someone over. And I think there's less focus now on actually just trying to understand where another person's coming from. And art does provide that space where an artist might be presenting their ideas and their view on the world, or they're framing a certain thing a certain way. But they're not saying that they're right or wrong. And they're not saying that the viewers, like whatever the viewer thinks is right or wrong. It's just that these ideas exist, do with them as you will. And there doesn't need to be like, there doesn't need to be a right and a wrong. I think there's, if we give up on those ideas, we'd just get so much more done.
Exactly. So I don't know, I think, and you know, we're trying to nurture a new generation of artists who can participate in public life. So they're not just there to make pretty things to go on walls. And, you know, I always worry about the North-South discussion because in lots of ways I just see, yeah, amazing advantage. We're 2 to 3 hours away from one of the world's global art trading centres. Awesome. Use it for that. And then you need a creative life, and that's a lot more difficult to have if you can't afford more than a garage, or, you know, in sort of in that environment. Find a different way of creating a life that fuels you, fuels your imagination. And for that, you do need a creative community. And so that's the other part of what we participate in building, because we need fellow travellers.
Oh, I love it. It does. Aww. It sounds like you're teaching like how to be an active participant in art. Not just, and it's more about how are you going to do that? It's like by applying to the school, it's kind of a contract that I as a student am willing to participate, and you as a school are willing to teach students how to, like, the best way for them to approach the art world. And I do feel in a lot of experiences I've had with artists and talking about my own experiences at uni and their experiences, I went to like a red brick university and I did my dissertation. Like I didn't go to an art school or anything. And what I learned was amazing, but it did kind of give me that, I don't know, I'm a bit jaded, honestly, because I do feel like I was not fully prepared, that there was so much focus on the academia, which I love and I still use, and I'm a big art geek now. So that wasn't the problem. I think it was more just that there was no way for me to use my academic thought in a real life sense, because I didn't want to use it to write an essay. I wanted to use it to go and have a cool conversation with someone. But like, how do you initiate that? I didn't know, and I had to find out by myself. But I think there was an opportunity there for my school to create that bridge, which it sounds like the MEMA Art School is doing. So I fully want to come to MEMA now.
Well, we've got MAs and PhDs. You can come and join us.
I'm not brave enough.
Oh no! I think there's something about that as well. It's you know you're signing up to be part of a community. I'm finishing a PhD. That's my line on it. I'm finishing a PhD at the moment. I've got
wonderful.
I know. It's one of those big challenges in my life, and I will get there. And lockdown hasn't been amazing for that, but never mind.
Yes, I can imagine.
is that one of the things one of my supervisors asked me is, what's the community that you seek to join through undertaking this work? And I thought it was such a good question, because, you know, I'm in lots of different communities, but it's trying to understand, you know, as you nudge towards connecting with different communities, you're learning the lingo, you're learning, you know, respectfully observing how those communities operate, what are the terms of engagement, how do you participate, what structures are there to participate. It just turns the question around, not what am I trying to study, but what's the community I seek to join and be part of? And how am I going to play a role in that?
It seems to change the question to not what are you studying, but why are you studying?
Yeah.
Which is the main, especially in postgrad, I think. It's really good to go in with that idea that you're kind of, especially being an artist, you're a student of the world, you know?
Yeah.
Studio, jack of all trades. Artists do it all. They're philosophers and they're like geographers and they're scientists and... Yeah, it's nice to bring that focus back, like not what are you doing, but why.
Yeah.
And take it back to the core.
Exactly. And that part of what we're doing as a museum and a gallery and an art school is to advocate for the why, that there's a big reason we need artists in our society more than ever now, because we need people who move between different spaces so that we don't just become very isolated in our various different perspectives, which then just get stronger and stronger, reinforced by algorithms and social media, but that we actually are moving and sort of they called it in the Anglo-Saxon era, they called it, and they were often women who took on this role, peace weavers.
Oh wow, that's magical.
I know, isn't it? And I often think that's one of the things that artists do, because they're peace moving weavers between spaces, and those sort of the weft and the traces that they bring between the spaces, they might be a thin stream, but as another one then comes back, it gets stronger and they weave between spaces, which create bridges where people can connect.
I'm going to be thinking
such a
about
good
that
way of looking at it.
Yeah, I'll think about that till the day I die. That's lovely.
Because I mean, just like I've learned so much through just seeing art and different exhibitions, like not just at the MEMA, but just like everywhere. It's like every time you go, it's an opportunity to learn. And like the artist is like teaching you, really. It's like, look, here's this perspective, or here's very specifically some information about a place in this cool, creative way. And just peace weaver. That's awesome.
Because they're never like, I never feel like an artist is telling me what to think. It's always, they're just encouraging me to think critically about what they're presenting. in the same way that someone writing a piece of critical writing might do, but as a dyslexic, that's not really my thing.
Yeah.
So it's potentially, I always think of art as having, it's like a universal visual language that we all know, because we all react to colour and symbol and shape and form and all that lovely stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's appealing to us. So we're drawn to beautiful objects and intriguing things. We want to know more. So it's kind of like it kind of grabs you and asks and makes you think about it. it doesn't tell you what to think, which is frustrating to a lot of people. I think some people like being told this is what this means, and you're never gonna get that from art, but that's important. You need that indecisive friend.
A core part of the group.
Yeah. Always down for a good time, but never quite sure what they want.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Something I want to ask about, and if we don't have time to cover it, that's all right, but just kind of on a logistical sense, what like the 2020 intake is going to look like for incoming students? Or is that like, has the Teesside University kind of got an action plan for that? Because I guess that's not like a MEMA School of Art specific plan.
Well, what we've said is, starting in September, it's still going to be a hybrid model, because, you know, no one's quite sure what the health situation will be like. So we have to plan and prepare for that. And the great thing is we're pretty good at that now. So all students who start with us get an iPad.
Mm.
And I know it's fantastic, isn't it?
Fancy.
It's loaded up with apps and tools and resources for them. And but we have to prioritize those high value experiences. Like you've been to MEMA, but you've not been to all of the various different buildings, and I'll have to take you there when we reopen.
I'm gonna demand a full tour.
So we've got this fantastic 1930s purpose-built maternity unit hospital,
yes,
that's turned into artist studios, which looks over the park and some beautiful old trees. And that's where we've got artist studios. We've got an old church turned into studios. We've got an old Victorian girls' school, which was built by the same person that the same architect as the Victorian Albert.
Oh, wow, no way.
Yeah.
This is cool.
That's called Waterhouses. So we've got all these fabulous resources, which have got enormous printing presses, 3D printers, metal cutters, paint spray booths, fabric printers, sewing machine rooms, sort of dye dip painting facilities, paper making facilities, and presses and all sorts of amazing kit like that. And in a way, that's the high value experience that we need to make sure that our students get access to those tools. So that's the priority, really, that anything that doesn't have to be physically present or direct won't be, because we don't need to do that at the moment physically.
Yep.
Yeah.
The things that we do need to do physically, that we will do, and that we'll create these safe environments so we can prioritise that, and so the students get really high value experiences supported by this community of learners that they meet online. And gradually, as we build up and things become safer in our communities, obviously we'll do more and more face-to-face interaction.
It's always nice to hear all the different like facilities and stuff that universities have. It's just cool.
Yeah.
And they sound like they're in really cool buildings, so we'll,
I love a repurposed building. Oh, it's so cool, man. That's something the North is good at, repurposed buildings.
Yeah,
like,
oh, that's true.
Everywhere in Leeds was a mill.
That's true. Yeah.
But no, that's fab. And it sounds like you can still have that the experience you can only get from art school is still there.
Yeah,
oh, definitely. And you know, also we're looking at how we use MEMA in that. We had our MEMA Mondays, and we've got the big atrium, and we've got the MEMA garden, so we can do outdoor seminars in the garden if need be. And we've got the big center square opposite where you can be socially distant but also see each other. So there's lots of opportunities to connect. It's just being prioritizing which ones are needed first, and how we give people access to those.
Oh, I love it. Well, it sounds like the art school is safe in your hands.
Oh, bless you. Like that, trying to hold the vision.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. Well, I think that's a really nice place to end it. Yeah. I feel as though, well, I've covered a lot.
Yes. It's been great.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's really nice hearing, like I say it all the time, I love behind the scenes looks at stuff. And so behind the scenes look at an art school is no different. Ooh, super interesting. A way we like to end episodes, Laura, is to kind of talk about, well, you know this, you've been on the show before. We like to kind of talk about something that we're looking forward to doing. But you don't have to do that. You can talk about something else that was good, because sometimes it's hard to say what you're looking forward to doing because you don't really know what's coming up. But I mean, my thing I'm looking forward to is also a good thing, is I've just completely upgraded my PC setup. So it's beautifully fast. It's amazing. And I've got so many games I can play it now. So I'm so excited to do that. Rosie, what about you?
Ooh. Okay, well, I mentioned that I'd been to see my friends and got horribly sunburned. Yes. I immediately went on Depop and bought myself a hat. So that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to my hat arriving in the post, and then I won't get a sunburned head ever again.
Oh, that's the dream.
Truly. What are you looking forward to, Rosie? Never having sunburn.
It's a big ask.
Like, I'm here and you've got sunburn again in a year's time or 6 months or whatever. No.
It's like, we're through. This relationship is over. Can't work with liars.
I was thinking, actually, on my things that I was going to say what had been good was also watching the Glastonbury highlights on television.
Oh, lovely.
Obviously not from this year, but I found it quite, in terms of this whole idea of FOMO, you know, fear of missing out, I quite liked the sort of, do you know what? We haven't got Glastonbury this year, so let's look at Glastonbury last year. Why not?
Yeah.
or the previous years. And I really enjoyed that kind of slow looking. So I've enjoyed looking at things, you know, that I haven't looked at for a long time because of this situation. So I think I'll leave it at that. Glastonbury highlights on the telly.
Yeah. I like that. That's good. That's a good one. Brilliant.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And thanks again, Laura, for coming on the podcast.
It's been so much fun
having a chat.
Thanks for having me. You two are amazing. I love your podcast. So it's great to be here.
Thank you so much.
Stop it. See, that's how you get on this podcast. And that's how you get on this podcast twice.
Oh, yeah.
Endless compliments, please. If you want to find out more about what the Mimo School of Art is up to, you can find them on the tees.ac.uk website. It's like tees.ac.uk/schools/Mimo. You can find out all the different courses that they're doing, and obviously these are on social media, on Twitter.
And if you want to get on our website, sorry to interrupt your amazing lines, but www.mima.art. We've put the Mima website, we've redone it. It's just an interim one, but we were like, we can't have that. We can't have that terrible website we had while we're locked down. But it's got a link to the Mima School of Art and Design on it. But you can also see some
amazing.
So
ooh, lovely.
Oh, perfect. See, there
inside
we go.
Scoop.
Well, yeah, we'll love a good new website here at High Art What's Good, because we've also recently done that. So.
Yes. Lockdown is the time.
Yes.
Website designers must be like inundated with business.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine.
Well, if you want to check out our shiny new website, it's the same URL. It's always been highartwhatsgood.com. And obviously we're on Twitter and Instagram at High Art What's Good. Thanks for having a listen. And thank you, Laura, again for coming on. And until next time,
everybody,
we'll see you later.
Stay safe out there. Bye.
Fantastic. Thank you. Bye bye.